At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
At Journey Beyond Divorce, we understand that navigating through the emotional tsunami of separation and divorce is one of the hardest journeys you'll take. And we know that once the initial fear and pain begins to pass, a whole new storm of confusion, uncertainty, and self-doubt can surface. Journey Beyond Divorce can help you identify and clarify where you're feeling stuck and what steps you need to move forward. Even if they're just baby steps, we guide you with practical, tangible support that you can start implementing right away. Our team of experienced divorce coaches is ready to help you. Listen through the show because we have a gift just for you. It'll help you navigate your divorce with more calm and confidence. You're listening to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast with Karen McMahon. We invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and enable you to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce.
I so remember coming in and just telling you these stories, and I must have sounded like a broken record.
Yeah.
And you would say, Jerry, if he did anything different, it would be surprising. You got his number. You know how he's going to react. He wants to stay in conflict. You know, and once I was able to manage that, it's not that it wasn't difficult. Believe me, it was so difficult. There was light at the end of the tunnel.
Welcome to Voices of Celebration. This series is designed to inspire and encourage you as we share real-life experiences of former Journey Beyond Divorce clients who invested in their personal growth through divorce and emerged a better version of themselves with a more rewarding post-divorce life. Today, I have with me my very dear friend and former client, Jerry Robin. Welcome, Jerry.
I feel welcomed. I'm excited to be here.
I am so excited to have you here as well. Jerry and I go way back. In fact, Jerry was my first official divorce client when I first opened my doors. And Jerry has one of the more heart-wrenching and encouraging stories to tell. Jerry has come a long way from when we first met. And so, Jerry, as you know, a lot of the work that we're doing at Journey Beyond right now has to do with working with men and women who are going through a high conflict divorce. And I'm curious, how would you describe to our listeners your divorce?
It's interesting. You say high conflict, and, you know, I didn't have anything else to compare it to. So I just sort of felt like this was my situation for the duration, and it was exponentially the worst thing that has ever happened to me. But I didn't know any different. So I wouldn't have realized even that my divorce was a high conflict one. Until I guess I step out of it. But I have had friends that have said that my divorce was one of the worst divorces they've ever seen. And to me, it was, you know, I thought that was an interesting comment. You know, it was certainly, as I said, the worst to me, but I didn't think that mine was any worse than anybody else's because that's what I had to deal with.
Right. And I think that to your point, if you're going through a divorce, there's a lot of conflict. And so regardless of whether or not you consider yourself divorcing someone who's a high conflict personality, we just want to honor the fact that all divorces feel like severe conflict, a lot of conflict. And yet in your situation, Jerry, there were numerous things that that made navigating a divorce smoothly more difficult in terms of the way your ex showed up and the impact that it had. And tonight, certainly, there's a lot of things we could talk about in Jerry's divorce, but tonight I really want to focus on your journey with your children, right, because that's such a such a potent part of it. And so can you just share a little bit about those early stages when you and your ex separated? What how many children do you have? What was the situation, sure, with your children?
I guess to everybody, when they actually decide to get divorced, they could sort of figure that out. But for whatever reason, I could not stay in this marriage anymore, and I chose to get a divorce. And basically, I upset that apple cart, and my children were all quite angry and lost. The oldest was just going away to college. And the next one was, 5 years younger. And the one after that is 3 years younger than that. So, they were in the junior high school age. So I guess my youngest was about 10 and the middle one was 13.
And when you separated, you guys physically separated.
Physically. Yeah. He was, he had to be removed from the house because he did strike me, and I wish it could have been handled better for my children, but the way it was explained to them, not by me, by my ex, whatever messages he got through to them, it wasn't a good one. I have no idea what he said or what he didn't say, but the children were not the concern to him.
And for you, I believe it was 4 years that you were living.
Yeah, it was 4 years where he was out of the house and we were working through getting divorced. And that was by far the worst situation. Very unsettling. Breathing was difficult. And if I'm really, such a private person, but if there's anything I could say that could help anybody, that would really make me feel good. It was such a challenging time. And Karen, your coaching was so helpful and beneficial to me because I would just get stuck in this tornado. And my energy level, and you showed me an energy chart, which really resonated with me, was victim. I was such a victim. And I couldn't understand it because I'm a high achieving person. I feel good about my parenting. I really love myself in general. And I found myself in a situation that was impossible.
Right.
And my energy level was zero. And I think that's how my ex-husband was able to work me, because he's an extremely angry person.
So a little backstory is that you have your own very successful practice as a dentist in New York City, and you had three boys, and your ex had a very successful, very financially successful business. Is that fair?
True.
So what's so interesting is if someone were to just be looking at you and your family from the curb, there was the big, beautiful home. There were the lovely cars. There were these two successful professionals. There were three absolutely handsome young men. But what was going on behind closed doors was not so pretty.
Yes, my ex was an alcoholic and never admitted to it and would never admit it to. And I basically covered that up my whole marriage. I thought that was the way to be. It did not serve me well at all because, you know, then when I said to my children, hey, you know, your dad's an alcoholic and it's just not possible to parent with a person like that who has just not just his alcoholism, but the lack of a conscience.
Yeah.
And the lack of care and the lack of concern. And it was a very, very independent marriage. And I was able to manage everything. I had great housekeepers. I had this great practice. I loved being a mother. And my ex really just, he showed up. I made all the dinners and he showed up. And I guess as, you know, I felt my boys really needed a mentor, that's when it was just so blaringly obvious that I have to do better. Yeah. I took him to parenting classes. There was this book, Learning to Talk So Children Will Listen, Listening So Children Will Talk. And I took him to the course. And he was a freaking star, you know, a star. But everything was for show. The car was clean. His hair was well-groomed. But he was covering up everything. You know, he never finished, really. He finished maybe a year of college.
So
and this, yeah, it was always that struggle. It was always like a competition that he had with everyone.
So during your 4 years where you guys were separated, because custody is a big part of your story, during those 4 years, and we were coaching through a chunk of that, what was dad's engagement and interaction and participation with the boys?
Pretty much the way it was during the marriage, just I guess it was a little bit more difficult for him. He never took them in 4 years. He never took them for one night. And this was a great source of upset, very upsetting for me, because every weekend the children would have their bags packed and he never came. And my children never, ever blamed him, yeah. Never held him accountable. And that was such a hard thing to deal with. But as I was told, children are a privilege, not an obligation. And there's no way you can say to your spouse, hey, you know, look what's happening.
And let me clarify what you're saying, because I think that people could misunderstand that. If you're not the primary parent, your parenting rights are privileged; they're not an obligation. So, if you're not the primary parent, you can be awarded 40% custody, but that doesn't mean that you have to take it or that you'd be penalized for not taking it. So, I think that's what you're saying is
and
his parenting was right, and yet there was something else that happened. So I remember you telling me that. He was very critical of you, but then it also, and so many of our listeners deal with this, which is why I'd like to just have you speak to it. Your boys were very critical of you. And I remember us talking and coaching around this, that it felt very much like your ex speaking through them, didn't it?
100%.
And
100%. And it was just tragic. It was such a hard situation. I was working as hard as I could, trying as hard as I could. And I just was really just, I felt like I was totally disrespected,
right.
You know, and there was nothing I could do to fix that situation.
Right.
You know, you helped me during that time and you kept saying, Jerry, took you a long time to break away. Give your children time to break away or to go wherever they want to go and hopefully they'll want to come towards the healthy parent. And I had to just respect that. That's another thing, acceptance. You have to accept your situation. And, you know, you start this divorce, you think it'll be a month, you think it'll be a year, you think it'll be, you have no idea. You just have to accept it's going to be difficult. And I don't want to run to the bottom of the list when things are a celebration, but getting through is just your goal. Getting divorced is just your goal, because you have no idea, you know, the burden of being in that situation where it's such an unhealthy situation. And not only do you have this ex who just basically, you know, wants to take you out, basically wants to cut you off at your knees, which I was told by his own friends he wanted to do. You have what he's saying to the children, and they're mimicking him and they're copying him. And I will say there's a big difference having boys than girls in a divorce. And I did the best I could, but I had to be very, very patient, and I had to have a good foundation, and I had to just stick to my guns on how a healthy person handles things.
Well, I want to invite you to bring back that subject of energy, because obviously, you know, it's a cornerstone of what we do, is we coach people around what emotional energy they're at. And the victim energy, as you described, is really like the lowest level that we could be at. Right. And so many people listening would really relate to this, just feeling like after years of being in a dysfunctional marriage where you may have been berated or abused or ignored or got the cold shoulder or got the explosions, whatever it was. And in your case, there was a decent amount of finances and wealth, and someone who someone could have very little and still have the exact same emotional experience. So the thing that in your situation, the wealth did was it allowed your ex to do some things that we're going to get to in a few minutes in terms of what happened with your custody, because money talks, and he had a lot of that to throw around. One of the things that you worked so hard on during that time was shifting out of the victim energy. And can you just talk a little bit about what that coaching around emotional energy did for you, both in your divorce and even afterward?
What truly made sense to me was this energy chart. And I felt no energy, totally fatigued, totally victim. And it just didn't make sense to me, because I've worked so hard on myself. There's so many things that I like about my life. And I felt like every cell in my body was dying. And then the next level of energy is anger. And that's where my ex was exceptional. And his anger just made everyone in the house nervous. I remember walking into my office one day, and my oldest son, and really, I have to say, I have really great children, really wonderful children. I never had major issues, and I'm thankful for that. My oldest son, he called me up just shivering in his boots. "Mom, I missed the school bus. Dad is going to kill me." You know, that's how he felt. That's how he felt. And that's so unfair, because my son's a good kid, and that does not happen. You know, it shouldn't have been that way. So the way I was able to get stronger with your coaching was, you know, the comments you would say, "Jerry, how is this thinking helping you? You're in this tornado. You're throwing out the baby with the bathwater." The energy chart showed me the lowest level is victim, but anger is just one level above it. There are so many other levels above it. And I literally visualized myself jumping over the anger and getting to the acceptance, peace, joy, and not judgment. And there's many, many levels after that. but I never really was able to do well with the anger. It just didn't work for me. I just wasn't good at it. I don't know. So I see myself jumping over it.
Yeah. And so many people who are conflict averse think that they don't spend any time in that level to anger energy. But the truth is the way it shows up in people who aren't exploders is worry, anxiety, disappointment, frustration. So it's all an inner turmoil. And to your point, when we step out of conflict energy, that level two, the next level is so valuable because it talks about what is my part, my responsibility in this? How can I forgive myself and the other parties or the situation? And the action ends up being, how can I cooperate with what's going on? And you were speaking about acceptance, and cooperation is a baby step toward acceptance. Instead of being like, this shouldn't be happening, why is this happening to me, why is he being that way? It's more like, it is happening, he is being that way, what can I do about it that's productive, that moves me in the direction of my desire rather than further away from it? And that's really so much of what you worked on so well over the time.
I agree. I mean, I so remember coming in and just telling you these stories, and I must have sounded like a broken record. Yeah. And you would say, Jerry, if he did anything different, it would be surprising. You got his number. You know how he's going to react. He wants to stay in conflict. You know, and once I was able to manage that, it's not that it wasn't difficult. Believe me, it was so difficult. There was light at the end of the tunnel. Right. And, but I did. I felt like I didn't just have my ex. I felt like I had my ex, and I had like three mini exes that were just throwing at me his same words. You know, they were having a hard time, and they were having trouble, and it was all turned around that it was, you know, my fault, my doing this divorce. And it was, you know, but I did marry him. I take responsibility for that. But I didn't have to be with him. I didn't have to live with him. And I felt that if I did not leave that marriage, I would have disintegrated.
You would have been a shell of yourself if you even still here.
Yes,
and I think that the point that you're making about the boys, so many people I work with, when a child shows up kind of saying the other spouse's words or accusations, it's easy. It's understandable that we would react to them as if they were our soon-to-be ex, which is incredibly dangerous and can decimate your relationship with your child. And so that was something that you had to face on a regular basis. And, you know, that your boys are not your ex, and just making that shift and that what I'm hearing now, that sensitivity, that it took me a lot of years to stand up to him and to make my decisions and to set my boundaries. So it would make sense that these very young people would need some time and space as well. And I think that was one of your shifts to be more forgiving of how they were showing up.
I put much effort, much work into separating my children from my ex.
Yeah.
And, it was critical, and it's wonderful, you know, and it's a good thing. And it's interesting. They love him. And I never said anything. My problem, I don't know if it's my problem, but, I never badmouthed him. I really said nothing. I don't know if it was to my detriment or my children's detriment. But I felt like I wasn't being heard anyway. And what good would it be to have my children, you know, dislike their father? They're going to see what they're going to see in their time.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's enough situations that they could see that they have to make their own decisions.
Calming the chaos of divorce begins with quieting your mind and getting clear on what you want and how to get it.
That's why we created the Divorce Survival Kit. It's an easy-to-digest guide with 5 essential tips that help transform your suffering into valuable insights and your confusion into effective action. So go to DivorceRecoveryLifeline.com and grab your Divorce Survival Kit today.
So fast forward, you were actually in the court system for a lot of years. And when it came right down to it, if I remember correctly, you did have an attorney for the children.
Yes. So the whole 4 years, he never took him one night.
And then?
Never took his children one night. And then it's actually my lawyer said we need to get a trial lawyer, because he wants to bring this to trial. So at the very, very end of my divorce, I had to hire another attorney. And then during that time, he basically convinced my children, and my older child said to me, "Mom, you know, it was one third my fault," convinced my children that they should live with him and that he should have custody of the children. So he hired a children's attorney, which I had to pay half for. And at that point, my children were, much older. And the oldest one was 17. The middle one was 17, and the younger one was 3 years younger. So it really only applied to the 2 younger children. But the older one was very, very outspoken that his father was going to give him a job and employ him. And he was going to go right into...
There was a vehicle, too, involved there.
Well, he promised my middle son, if they would tell the lawyer that they wanted to live with their dad, that the middle son would be getting a car.
So, and just to pause and let that settle in with our audience. And so here you were legally separated for 4 years. The boys lived under your roof every single night. Dad didn't take them to any overnights. You were primarily responsible for them. And yet when you went to court, he was really advocating for full custody. And in fact, he won, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah. Well, it wasn't even like he won. He won because the children said they wanted him. And it was literally my youngest child said, "Mom, you had us for 4 years. Now it's Dad's turn." And that was his thinking. And there was no response I could have to that.
Well, he was in ninth grade, I believe, when wasn't he?
The youngest one was like ninth or 10th grade.
Yeah.
When this happened. The oldest the middle one was, he had 1 year left of high school, the middle one. The older one was, in college, about to graduate. And so it was nothing short of terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I can't, even as you're saying it now, even though I was there with you, like the impact of that is on one's heart. What was that like for you to...
Yeah, I basically thought that I am no longer a parent, that my children did this, they chose to do this, and you kept saying you have to respect their opinion. You have to accept it. I had to accept it. It was the worst thing that ever happened to me in my life. I had to accept it. And
you made some really, really difficult and, dare I say, brilliant decisions in that moment where, all right, I'm not going to have custody. Dad's going to be back in the house. Dad's going to be in charge of these boys. And I remember part of you was really concerned for them and what
very,
that experience would be like.
It wasn't that he was back in the house. I was being kicked out of the house and he was moving into the house. And of course we had this big house and, I wouldn't be able to afford, didn't have that type of money. I couldn't afford a house like he had, and I'd be renting something that wouldn't be half as nice, but those children were going to be on my doorstep. I'd have to get a housekeeper. I'm still working full time, and they're not respecting me. I was basically, you know, dog do on the bottom of your shoe. That's what I was. And I couldn't stay in a Long Island situation like that. Have him drive around, you know, with the fancy cars with a different flavor of the month, and have my children see this. And it was a situation I felt impossible. And you say brilliant. I have to tell you, I made the decision to pick up and move out of Long Island and move into the city where my practice was. And I had, you know, healthiness, good things. To live in Long Island in that environment with my children and feeling extremely alone, you know, he was able to manipulate the teachers into thinking I was a bad parent. He would tell me other parents would say, oh, they saw, you know, your youngest walking out of soccer practice without a jacket with a terrible cough. They think you're a bad mother too. You know, I couldn't get out of it.
So you moved into the city.
Moved into the city. And of course, everyone was like, oh, you, everyone was. But to me, I was jumping off a cliff. Someone was chasing me from behind, and I had to jump off that cliff. I had no other choice in my mind.
What do you mean by that? Because I think I want you to explain what you mean by that, because you you made a decision to move towards something. You definitely made a decision to move away from the suburbs. But what were you moving toward? Because there was something very positive in the decision that you made. And jumping off a cliff makes it sound like this kind of desperate Hail Mary. But what were you moving toward in making that decision to go into the city?
Okay, so just guide me if I go off focus with this, Karen, because we spent such an incredible learning. I learned so much. But when I say jump off the cliff, basically by my ex doing this with this children's lawyer, I felt like I was no longer a parent.
We used to talk about that a lot.
I felt I was not a parent. And to me, and I have not cried, and I haven't cried about this, and because I did my share of crying. I love being a mother. I just respect my children. I love them. I enjoy them. I appreciate them. But basically, the situation was
you lost that role.
I lost being a parent, and for me to stay in the city, I felt like I was going to be the freaking housekeeper.
Oh, to stay on Long Island.
How could I not let my children in? But yet I'm working, but yet there's no supervision. It would be just like it was before. Children are a privilege, not an obligation. And I just could not allow that to happen. So I moved into the city. I have this wonderful practice in the city. I love doing my dentistry. And it wasn't like, oh, gee, happy day, I'm moving into the city. It was, I walked the streets. My youngest son was just beside himself, and he made the comment, Mom, if I ever knew you would do this, you know, I wouldn't have done that. And it was an unfair situation all around because the legal system didn't prepare my children for what if, and nobody asked me what if. I didn't even ask myself what if. I just knew the way things evolved, and it happened in like a very a one-month period. That last month in May 2013, he took them,
and that was
three weekends in a row. All 4 years, he never took them. So I'm not sure if I'm getting at the point you wanted me to speak to the audience.
Yeah, I think that a couple of things. One is just in terms of how we coach. So one of the things was you were just grieving tremendously because of your love of being a mom day in and day out. And yet the story that I'm no longer a parent was something we coached around, because that wasn't true at all. It was, what was true was that you lost your day in and day out role and you felt so lost. And to say that you literally went into the city and walked the streets was probably exactly what you did, because you were shell-shocked.
I was shell-shocked, yeah. But I knew that I had to get out of that right. horrible situation.
Right. It was the lesser of two evils for you.
There was no getting out of that victim mode.
And I want to fast forward yet again. So you went through a period of time where your older son was still in college or about to graduate. Your two younger sons were in high school years, heading into college, living with dad, which means that the youngest was actually living alone with dad for a couple of years. At what point, and this is really important because I think that it's so important for our listeners to know that whatever hell you're in the middle of, it's not the end of the story. And don't behave every day that this is the end of the story. And so the middle of your story is heart-wrenching. But it wasn't the end of the story, was it? And so could you celebrate for a few minutes and tell our listeners what happened from going from like not seeing them on a daily basis to where you are today?
It was a very, very slow process. And I just, from your coaching and just finding myself again, because I did, most of my life, I really am a very, very happy person and high achieving and enjoying life and love being a mom, to this just terrible tragedy. So once I got into the city, it was day by day, and my children were old enough, if they wanted to come into the city to see me, they could. And they had to negotiate living with their dad as best they could. He was arrested for drunk driving about a year after the divorce, for going the wrong way on the Long Island Expressway, intoxicated with his, brand new Maserati. And that was in the newspaper and on the news. And still my middle son, who by all means is a very bright young man, he basically said there was construction and dad got lost. And so it was very clear to me that I should never say anything, because if he could see this situation and still take it that way, he's got to figure it out on his own terms. At that point, I called my lawyer and they said, oh, if you want, you can get custody back. But I already did such wonderful work with you. And I respected their opinion. And I wasn't going to turn around and say, oh, now I'm forcing you to come back and live with me, or play with their heads to say you shouldn't be with that type of parent. I wasn't going to do that. I stuck to my guns. One of the great things was, one of the things I fought through in the marriage was to keep a summer home, have a summer home. And come hell or high water, my children are in that summer home with me the entire summer. So what's that say? What does that say? Is it just the home? Is it the home that I created? I feel that it was important to me to create independent children that wouldn't be dependent on a parent like that. Love him, but, you don't have to be like him. Pick whichever qualities that are best in your parents or in other people you see. Separate myself from the bad. Yep. And just expose myself to the healthy things, developing myself in my career or doing things with my children. And it was so many chapters ago that it's hard to even relive it. But I did everything I could to minimize him.
And I was chatting with you while you were at your beach house just this weekend, right. And two of your three boys were there. And from everything right. I could tell, you have a rather beautiful, warm, loving relationship with each of them, don't you?
I really do. I do. I don't know what else to say. I do.
Do you remember being afraid of what that relationship would look like when everything was falling apart?
I was. I was afraid to speak to my children. I didn't know what to say to them. Everything I said was criticized. My ex told them I'm not a real doctor. I'm a terrible driver. I'm a terrible parent. I don't dress appropriately. This is what was coming through. What he was actually saying to them, I do not know. But
and now? What would your boys say about you now?
I think my boys really like me. They love me, but I think they like me. I think they're proud of me. I feel good, you know, when they introduce me to their friends. They're always inviting their friends over to the house. You know, we have wonderful, you know, times, and
you know,
it's nothing to even say. It's just, it's right. It feels good, and I'm grateful every single day.
And I think that's the message I really wanted to hear you relay to our listeners, because when we talk about the emotional energy, you began down in that level one victim, but what you're describing is level 5, 6, and 7. You're describing peace, you're describing joy, you're describing this ability to drop judgment and just really enjoy what is. And that's the work that you did. And what you're describing now is having post-divorce with those boys. It sounds pretty special.
One more thing I wanted to say. I had to work on myself. And I had to work on myself so I could give my children a model how they can work on their selves. Mm-hmm. Because he's still their father. And if they get caught up in his anger, you know, how sad would that be? So I really, really did everything for my children, even though I ended up not getting custody of them. I don't know any other way how to say it or do it, but I divorced him, you know, because I felt my children were entitled to better, or to at least show them that that's not how you should be as a human being. That's my message.
And as we wrap up, what final words of wisdom or encouragement would you like to give to those listening in who are in those early stages of pain and confusion and fear? What do you want to say to them?
You know, having a life coach that, and the way you and I even got together was so fortuitous. It really, really helped because I was getting so bogged down. But if you're in that terrible, terrible predicament, you know, it's nice to have validation, but you can't count on it. The court system is unbelievably challenging. You try and have the compassion and love for your children, because they're very miserable, and you're usually the one that they're going to let it out on. But do everything you can to get divorced, you know, because some people like to keep it going, and you know, that becomes their life. But you do everything you can to get divorced, because you cannot heal until you get divorced. You know, you're still in the playground with them. Once you get out of the divorce, then you could be the best for yourself and the best for your children. A therapist once said to us, because I did try marriage counseling, and they said, of course, the best thing is to have this happy marriage. And the second best thing is to be happily divorced. I wouldn't say, I can't speak for him, but they said to be in a marriage where there's so much conflict, that's not good for children. At all.
Yes. So yeah, and most of the evidence says that children suffer more from conflict than they do from divorce. So, and if you're in a high conflict divorce, as you were, every opportunity to minimize it, even if it's post-divorce and just not engaging, all of that's better for the kids. And so, Jerry, I think that your story is one of heartbreak and overcoming. And I have the honor of knowing and the privilege of knowing your boys and knowing the relationship you have. And I think for so many parents who feel like you've lost your children, that they're so aligned with the other parent, perhaps the high conflict parent, when you show up as love and when you decide what your priorities and your values are and you just stay the course, we all just want to be loved. And so children of all ages will always navigate back to love, no matter how much money or other such things are dangling. At the end of the day, we want to be loved. And I think that your boys are an example of coming around in exactly that way.
I'm very thankful. I'm very, very thankful.
So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you again soon. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.